Okay, I'm gonna start it over. My name is Adam Farrell, and you're listening to the sweet, smooth tones of the Music Video Land podcast. This time, my mic is actually plugged into my computer. And this is the Music Video Land podcast brought to you by your super good friends at filmedinsert.com. Like I said, I'm Adam, and then with me from his home in Florida is Douglas Klinger, the third. Hi, Doug. How you doing?
Super good. Like you just said, your friends are. Kind of took the air out of my super good, but whatevs. Hey,
that's okay.
How are you, Adam?
I'm very good because we talk about music video news or some music video topics, but we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, ourselves this podcast,
which in turn is music video news because filmed insert should become synonymous in your head with music videos.
That's right. And this is a big podcast for a number of reasons. Number one is we have a really fantastic music video director on the podcast today, and that is Mr. Lex Hallaby. Doug and I, way back in March, we went to the Doomsday screening, and we saw, I think, the last video they showed. No, no, not the last. Toward the end was the video for a song called Hallways by a band called Islands. Which is a really great video featuring some puppeteering work, which is interesting and rare in the music video world nowadays. And we thought we'd get in contact with him because the rest of his work is really interesting, really fantastic work, such as The Piranhas Club by Man Man, as well as National Disgrace by Atmosphere. And he has also done some really interesting work using music videos as part of some campaigns or some marketing campaigns for Disney as well as some other groups. So if you go to the show notes, check out his website. He's got all some links. And actually, I really recommend going and checking out he has some little videos of him talking about all sorts of different projects that he's worked on. Because he's really has a lot of experience in incorporating music videos into marketing, interactive marketing campaigns. So really interesting conversations with Lex coming up in the second half of the show.
So make sure that if you just usually listen just for me and Adam talking and ignore the interviews, stick around for this one because it's a good one.
It's always a good one. We have, I think I posted on the blog last week that it was our 50th podcast anniversary last podcast.
Yep.
And it was interesting looking over the list of people because we've had a really fantastic list of people. When we started the podcast.
Yeah, no. Let me just say, don't get me wrong. Yes, every interview is great, but this one is particularly great. If you're listening now and you hear my voice, listen to this interview too. That's all I'm saying. But let's go reminisce again. Because, yeah, that first, we didn't know where we'd be. Ep one.
Well,
we were like, what is this?
Well, I think when we started the podcast, we didn't really know anything about the music video industry. I think names that are really familiar to us when we started, you know, like Hiro Murai or, you know, Ryan Reichenfeld, Isaac Ravi and Shankara, some of the people who were kind of the first guests on the podcast. I'm just looking here at the list here, like Ryan McNeil, Isaac Rents, Yoram Benz, Ben Barnes were a few of the early guests. We didn't really know who they were. We knew their work, but we didn't really have a sense of the whole music video community. Now, you know, we've been at LA a few times. A lot of a good number of people on the list we've met or Doug has met, and we've gotten to really get a feel for what's happening in the music video community. It's really exciting because it just keeps growing in terms of the creativity. I think the enthusiasm of people who are making music videos and the people who are watching them. It's just, the industry is really experiencing a really interesting resurgence.
And due to that resurgence, and because of the fact that we saw what was going on within this industry, when we started, it was just for funsies. But now that it isn't, now that we've seen what's going down in the industry, we've got firsthand look, some experience. we've decided that we're not leaving.
That's right. Because, yeah, as Doug said, this was a side project at first. Side projects are usually good to keep them as sort of small things. As a developer, a lot of people's side projects are, you know, code libraries, things like that. I was a little naive to take on an entire, you know, massively complex database as a side project, but it was something that Doug and I were both really interested in. And, you know, Doug and I, for the past, you know, since the site has started, have had side jobs. And starting pretty much now, we are both taking a shot at doing Filmed Insert full time, which we're very excited about.
Insert clapping sound effect here, because we're super excited, as we can tell you guys are, even though this is not a live broadcast, and even though you could be listening to this at any time of the day, we could feel your energy and excitement even now. And so we appreciate that energy and excitement, and we're doing it for you guys because we love you.
Wow, you're getting really sentimental there.
I mean, these are our lives. These are our lives, Adam. If we're not sentimental, we've already lost. That's what I'm saying.
So, you know, what does this mean for people who are fans of the site? Well, number one, it means that you are going to see a lot of changes. And the changes will revolve around things that we didn't have the resources to do before.
First of all, every time you sign onto the site, it's $75. So,
yeah, we're doing an immediate monetization plan.
You get $75 per reload, so be gentle.
Before you even see anything, they just pop up that, first there's a porn pop-up.
Yeah, right.
Just and then on top is an unsecured credit card form. Right.
CCs.
You know, what we're doing is we're, you know...
First, let's be very, very clear and honest. No money. Everything is... None of that is changing. Nothing is costing money.
Right. So what we're doing is, you know, rolling out some things that cost... but, you know, are resource intensive. So things like, you know, taking a look at music videos are coming out during the day and, you know, showing you guys what's happening now. And increased focus on your interactivity with the site. What that means is, you know, two things. One is, you know, as a fan interacting with the site, we've got some really exciting things in store, as well as, you know, if you are somebody in the music video industry interacting with the site, if you, you know, have a music video you want to get up on the site, if you want to correct information, if you want to add information, things like that. So those things, which, you know, when Doug and I were just kind of doing this in our off time, were not really possible, are now possible. So we're excited to roll those out. And for people who are listeners of the podcast, of course, we're definitely continuing the podcast because we're complete classic narcissists and we love to hear ourselves talk. So we will continue on doing that and getting great interviews and doing the best to bring you the super cool, smooth, doing super good sounds of me and Doug every week.
Yeah, and also, you may have become a little familiar with our blog, as we've spoke about a little bit on the podcast a bit. Well, guess what? That's going to be gearing up a few octaves as well, right?
Yes.
So, look out for more blogging.
So everything
loves blogs.
Everything all around, you know, time is you know, so important for making something successful, and we're a few things have happened for us in terms of, you know, being able to do this. So we're really excited to be able to pour the full resources into there, and it's gonna be interesting. Listening back to the first episode, you know, 50 episodes ago in February of 2011, I think, you know, the site was extremely tiny in terms of the code base and the sophistication of the system. and we've grown leaps and bounds, and we're looking to grow many more. So stick with us, everybody. Enjoy, and if you enjoy the podcast, like I shamelessly was plugging on the blog post about the 50th podcast, go on iTunes and then give your credit card number to iTunes right in the text, right in the comment box.
Yeah, just type in your CCs and. No, but dude, we love love from in the posts on iTunes, and so give it to us there, and also everywhere else. And thanks in advance.
So now let's get back to the business of music videos. This is what we are here for.
More importantly, not about ourselves, not about self-promotion.
No, we don't care about self-promotion. We care nothing. Yeah, and actually, we should also mention that next week's episode is going to be a little bit of self-promotion by Doug, because we're going to be talking about the OMG Everywhere, which Doug just came back from last week. So if you're listening to the podcasts wondering where that topic is, we're going to do a whole show on it next week.
Yep, but that's right. It's going to be a good one.
So we are going to talk right now to Mr. Lex Hallaby, who is a director extraordinaire. And like I mentioned before, he's got some really great work, some stuff we're really big fans of. Go check it out, his filmed insert page on in the show notes. We'll link to it from there. And then, like I also mentioned before, there will be a link to his website where he talks a little bit about Into the Camera, which is fun. A lot of directors don't do that. Kind of explain what they're doing in a little kind of monologue, but he talks a little bit about his work with interactive marketing campaigns and campaigns that have multiple components, but one of them is a music video, and how that kind of works into there, and his experience in the industry working with that kind of material. So check it out. Here's our interview with music video director Mr. Lex Hallaby.
My name is Lex Hallaby. I'm a director. I've done everything from music videos to commercials to interactive.
And you know, like you mentioned, you have experience both in, you know, music videos that would be just considered sort of traditional music videos, where they are, you know, just, you know, the videos themselves and kind of self-contained units, as well as music videos that are part of, you know, larger marketing campaigns. How did you kind of find yourself in that space, you know, working with, you know, Nickelodeon and Coca-Cola and these large brands in a marketing capacity?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. Those projects, my reel is pretty diverse, and I kind of balance some of those larger projects that are tied into brands or into television with smaller, more personal projects. But those come about through a variety of ways. Usually, the jobs have come in from agencies that are familiar with my music video work. In the case of Nickelodeon, they released through Sony. So those jobs were commissioned between Sony and Nickelodeon themselves. So you know, I think it's definitely part of larger campaigns, and it sort of sets up a whole other. A whole other workflow, but they're rewarding in a different way. So yeah, I try to balance them out.
And how defined is that line between the three things you mentioned? You do music videos, commercials, and interactive. And you've also, I mean, some of your videos can kind of be labeled as all three. Like in the case of the Jasmine V video, is there a defined line between each of those three things, or is it pretty blurred?
It's pretty blurred, and it's getting more blurred, to be honest, especially between music videos, commercials, and now interactive is starting to creep in. You know, each of the projects sort of have their own degree of crossover and, you know, between those categories. You know, I think at the core, you know, it's still about kind of creating something that is, you know, fun for the user to watch or to interact with. So a lot of times the goal is the same. There's just different ways about going about it and different technology being used.
Now you have another unique perspective, which is you've been making music videos for a while. The earliest one we have in the database for you is 2006, the National Disgrace Atmosphere video. And around that time, YouTube was very new, and there wasn't a lot of outlets for video online there. When you made a video in 2006, at that time MTV wasn't really playing a lot of videos. Where was the sort of the intended destination when you finished something like that?
Man, I mean, I'll tell you, when I started in videos, yeah, the way to get a video online, this is a true story. I mean, the way that I started out getting videos online was basically, I found a website which was like Yahoo used to kind of be one of the few places where videos were shown, part of Yahoo Music. So I looked up an address for them. After I shot videos, I would go and I would make a beta dub of it and ship the tape to them, and 4 to 6 weeks later, like they had ingested it, and it was like up on the Yahoo Music website. That's what it was
That's
when I
awesome.
had started making videos, and that wasn't even that long ago. But it just kind of like goes to show how now it's like instantaneous. I mean, we're delivering and oftentimes delivering and posting sort of at the same time. But yeah, it's changed a lot, sort of the immediacy and sort of the community built around it. The idea of commenting and sharing and all that with social media has definitely grown and has helped a lot. I kind of wish the Atmosphere video was done now, because a lot of people haven't seen that video. I'm really proud of that one, and I think part of that was just the distribution channels back then were much more limited. It did get a little bit of play on MTV2 as part of like 120 Minutes, but they actually, I think they put the producer's name as the director. They didn't even get my name on it, so I never really got much love from that video.
Oh yeah, because I guess if they accidentally got your name wrong on the little blurb that goes at the beginning and the chyron at the beginning, then that was pretty much it. That was kind of canonical.
Yeah, that's it back then. It's like nobody could ever trace it to you. That was like the only way. And even then, it's like if they did see your name, going about contacting you was much harder than it was now. And again, we're not even talking that long ago, what, 6 years ago? I mean, that video, I guess, was done maybe a little bit earlier than that, but it kind of hit the web six years ago, I think. Yeah, definitely. Times have changed. I mean, that was shot on film too, I should say.
Oh, really? Wow.
Now with I mean, it's to people who haven't seen it, it's a video shot in extreme slow motion, around 500 frames a second, and this was prior to HD Phantom cameras and things like that. So we were using an Action Master 500, 16mm, shot at 500 frames a second. So we shot, I think about 3 hours of film, I think, but that was pretty much doing one take per shot with no playback, not knowing whether you got it or not. So it was a challenge and an experiment, but I'm happy with how it turned out.
And I can't believe that that's the first instance we've heard of actually sending in a tape to a website to put it up. That's pretty incredible. And then, take it all the way to, we actually were in LA in the end of March and saw the hallways, by the Islands video in a theater, which was really fun. It was kind of a different experience to see that music video in a theater. And we wanted to ask you about that because, the sort of the production or inception of that concept and the basically the production process is, I guess, is what I'm getting at, because it's such a unique kind of claymation or puppetry. I was just wondering how that video was made, basically.
I've gotten that question quite a bit, and I'm glad. I mean, it's a question I like to hear. It was done with puppets, but the idea was to sort of blur the lines a little bit so it's not easily recognizable. There are some puppetry videos that sort of go out of their way to show that it is puppetry. You're seeing the rods or even the puppeteers in some instances. Me and my co-director Tobin on that job, had decided early on to do puppets, but to hide the fact that it was done with puppetry. One of the ways that to do that is to get really good puppeteers. We're working with a group of great puppeteers that has sort of helped us blur that line. We also shot with a small shutter, so that helps make it feel like stop motion in a way, because each frame is a little bit more crisp. You don't see the blur, so it makes it feel a little bit more like single frames being shot. But yeah, I mean, that puppet stands just a few feet tall, and all the instruments are just a couple feet tall. We shot it on a miniature stage, and then we composited Nick, the singer from Islands, onto that stage. We sort of matched all the angles and extrapolated from a miniature to real life to put the camera up across the sound stage on the green screen and shoot everything from the same perspective. So when they're blended together, it kind of creates this this sort of hybrid, weird, can't quite put your finger on it aesthetic, which we're really happy about. That's exactly what we were going for.
And maybe I'm just showing ignorance about the band Islands, but are there other members in Islands beside the actual singer?
Yeah, there are. Although Nick, you know, Nick writes the music and he's sort of the front man and the face of the band. He was in Unicorns prior to forming Islands.
Go ahead.
No, so I mean, when it came around to doing the video, it was a close collaboration with Nick, sort of through every step of the process. I had known him before, met him a few times because he has a project called Mr. Heavenly with the singer from Man Man, who I've worked with quite a bit over the years. So it was a close collaboration. It wasn't just like an open brief that all these different directors were working on. It was us having conversations over the course of a couple months to its fruition.
Well, there's this kind of great tradition or fun tradition in music videos of you know, a human singer playing with, you know, non-human or, you know, other elements that are musical elements but aren't other members of the band. So I've always wondered if, you know, you make a video like this, do the person who's the drummer, does he kind of get a little angry at all that he's kind of being replaced by a skeleton in a video like this? Or because of that close collaboration, is that not really an issue?
I don't think it was an issue on this one. I think from the get-go, the original idea didn't have Nick in it. And then we decided, you know, that it would be great to have him interacting with them. Just even before the concept was really written, we were talking about doing something just without him in it. And part of that was logistics, because he wasn't going to be in town. But then once he was, we worked him into it. And then, you know, I think there was a little bit of a conversation towards after shooting actually all the performance and skeleton stuff about including the rest of the band in the bookends, basically like in the intro, coming across this record player. But in the end, you know, we had a conversation about it, Tobin and I, and we decided that it would feel a little bit strange, because then why is Nick the only one in human form in the video? And also, we wanted to kind of create a creepy atmosphere and to have a whole band of guys walking and discovering this thing just didn't really feel right for the tone.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that Adam mentioned that we saw the Islands Hallways video while in LA, because actually every time I go to LA, I go to some event where one of your videos gets screened. The last time I was there, I was at the LA Music Video Festival, and your Man Man Piranhas Club video was shortlisted at the event. And I was wondering, are these, you know, festivals and screenings part of what, like a way that you're trying to help promote your work, or is that something that you're not really a part of and in the production company is more involved with? Because your work actually turns up in a lot of different film festivals and kind of screenings and events like this. Is that something that comes from you?
I think it's a combination. I mean, I've definitely been approached. Sometimes videos, they go up online, they get picked up by blogs, and there are film festivals that reach out and say, hey, we'd like to include you in this festival. But then another side of that is submissions from me or from my company. From my reps, from Danielle. Part of a larger strategy, because ultimately I do want to do narrative, and I do want to screen my narrative work at film festivals. And my experience is, you know, that through music videos, since that's where I've come up, it's a good way to start building those relationships having a reason to be at the festival, to meet the judges, the organizers. So when the time comes, when I have something narrative that I'd like to get out there, those relationships are already in place, and it makes it a lot easier.
And, you know, the video Doug mentioned, the Piranhas Club, or the Man Piranhas Club video, is one of our favorites. It definitely has that narrative element to that. I was wondering if you could clue us in as to some of the, or if there was any sort of inspirations for that. You know, obviously it's kind of harkening back to these times of, you know, in the 50s, kind of greasers and bikers, things like that. Was there any cinematic inspiration that you guys drew from for that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. There was, you know, I had a conversation with Ryan, the singer of Man, and, you know, his music has a little bit of that crooner sensibility to it. It has a little bit of that vintage, that retro vibe. And, you know, this idea of greaser kids just kind of came into my mind. And we almost work backwards into the inspiration of Crybaby, the John Waters film that shows up in the intro. We had some conversations about what that film should be and what would best represent. But yeah, it was it had kind of started with the music in that case. From kind of a look standpoint, there were a few things that had inspired me, one of which was Terrence Malick's new movie, Tree of Life. So Tree of Life, like one of the things that sort of had inspired it was Tree of Life, and that was because the way that film was shot was almost entirely shot from the eye level of the kids, and that's something that I'd spoken about with my DP Johnny Ching, that I wanted to shoot everything from these kids' eye level, and so sort of the whole world is seen from 4 feet off the ground. Of course, Johnny was a trooper and. Like, you know, was basically pulling his back out every day on the job, trying to hold the camera at that height, shooting off his knee. But that idea, I think, kind of paid off in making the world feel real and making it feel like we're in these kids' worlds rather than kind of looking down on them. Because every time people see the kid in real life, they came out to the Los Angeles Film Festival, for example, people are kind of shocked at how small they really are because they don't know it because of our height that we sort of shot them at, you know. But beyond Tree of Life, of course, there's other references with kids in cinema that we had pulled from, but yeah, I would say it's a little bit of a mix.
And I was wondering about the logistics of these kids, because they're doing some pretty crazy stuff in the video. How much of it was pre-planned, and how much of it is like you kind of stumble upon a cat and it's like, all right, which one of you guys is willing to pick this dead cat up? I mean, is it kind of a little bit of both, or is it primarily planned out?
It's definitely a little bit of both. It's really hard to plan stuff with a group of 8-year-olds because especially when you're shooting out in the desert across 3 days on a micro budget. I mean, this job was micro budget, so we're just getting by. And yeah, I did write out a long list of vignettes that I wanted to shoot, you know, arrange them into a schedule, always had a plan B. We were shooting all over, you know, the desert community of Lancaster, Palmdale. And so just knowing that we may not get a location, we might get kicked out of a location, there might be issues with shooting there. We kind of had to have a very flexible production plan, which will, you know, basically make my hair turn gray throughout that whole shoot, because it was very nerve-wracking to just not know whether, you know, certain key pieces of your project are gonna come together, or if you're gonna have to be doing something else for the next day. And we definitely had a little bit of both. There was some stuff we just didn't get time to shoot, certain locations we just couldn't get on the day, but we always had another plan. We stayed mobile, and our crew was just like 4 or 5 people, so it was easy to all hop in the minivans and move somewhere else if something wasn't working.
And the other video, one of those videos you've done for Man Rabbit Habits, has a really well-known cast. You've got Fred Armisen, who since Portlandia has really become sort of a really big, Charlene Yee, obviously, and then Martin Starr. I was wondering, when you have you know, videos that have a cast like that, has that kind of narrative comedic element to it, What difference does it make in terms of the visibility that you guys get, in terms of views, in terms of blogs picking you up? Does just like a feature film, does the cast of a music video have a big difference?
I think that's definitely the case, having a celebrity or a name in a project increases visibility. I think there's a lot of celebrities, A-list actors that want to be in music videos to kind of, I don't know, maybe combat an image issue they're having, or just to associate with like a really cool indie band, and then some that are just like, what the fuck? I have no idea why they're in this project. That happens too. It's kind of a double-edged sword. But in the case of the Man Man Rabbit Habits video, I think it definitely helped. I know it was picked up and covered pretty well by different blogs. It definitely doesn't hurt as long as they're the right people for the project, and as long as they're the project should be able to stand alone outside of them. But yeah, beyond that, sure, it definitely helps with publicity. There's just so many videos posted every day to really kind of rise above and get some media attention. Sometimes having that name in there will just pique somebody's interest.
It seems like the what the fuck am I doing on this project from an actor's point of view or from a director's point of view comes from experience in your case. Am I reading that right?
I mean, honestly, like everybody that I've worked with has been great. I haven't had any sort of problems with celebrities or talent on my jobs. They've all wanted to be there. They've all done a great job. But I do sometimes see music videos, that when I do see a certain celebrity in it, it doesn't click. Like there doesn't feel like there's a natural connection between that person and the band or the music. So that disconnect could be like a real kind of turn off. Then it just seems like you're sort of pouring it up for views. But if they're involved in the creative process and they definitely, it feels like they belong there and it serves the project, then by all means, like it can definitely help elevate visibility.
It felt like Fred Armisen and Charlene Yee really had a part in creating that video, or at least that opening, or the scenes between them.
Yeah, absolutely. They were a huge part of that. Myself, Charlene, and Ryan kind of ran through the script. Charlene sort of had done the first draft or the bulk of that writing in that intro, and then we riffed on the set. We tried a few different things. There was definitely some improv. I mean, when you have Fred Armisen there, who's one of the best improvers and sketch comics. Why not use his talents? And we played with things and tried different things, and he was great. It was great. I honestly, everybody on that set was down for the project 100%, and put their all into it. I mean, look, you never even see Martin Starr's face in that project, and he was down for it. Two nights in a day, basically, of work. Without even seeing his face, so I can't thank him enough for doing that. That's how you know somebody's down. It's not like, well, when do I get to take off my mask and have my big scene,
And about like a collabor collaborating with other people. A couple weeks ago, we had Hank Friedman on the show, and he's someone who frequently edits a lot of your work. He didn't say that you did this specifically, but he mentioned that oftentimes, the directors who use him to edit their work are constantly over his shoulder, or right there with him, and making sure that it's going their way. Is that kind of your style, or are you more kind of like put it in the hands of the editor and let them kind of do their thing, and then you just make your tweaks in the back end?
For editorial, it depends. I really do like working with Hank, and he is on a short list of editors that I use and that I trust to understand and to handle the material. I come from an editing background in that I cut videos for my own videos for the probably the first half of my career. For the most part, I cut them myself. So I kind of I definitely do have quite a bit of input in that, but What I like to do coming into editorial is basically lay out the story I'm trying to tell, the beats I'm trying to hit, sort of an outline, like, okay, at this chorus, I just want to be in this section, in the bridge, that's where this changes up. And, in the final chorus, boom, we're back into this. So I like to give that, and then I like to see what the editor does so they can surprise me. I don't want to micromanage from the very beginning because then you're basically just telling somebody what buttons to push. You're not allowing them to look at the material and see something that maybe you didn't see because they're a little bit more objective. So I think it's a combination. I think if you ask editors about me, they would probably say I'm pretty hands-on, but I like to think I at least give them like a first pass before I come in and start to really go through it with them if there's stuff that I feel isn't working or stuff that that they surprise me with that I want to do more of.
Now, I wanted to ask also about, you have some videos in your canon, like the Dancing Crazy by Miranda Cosgrove, also known as iCarly, as well as the Kimberly Caldwell video, which, when you look at the other artists, in that you've worked with, like Atmosphere, and Man Man, they are definitely of like a different genre. I'm just wondering in terms of the process behind a video like Dancing Crazy, which is, definitely has more of like a pop feel to it, and something like Piranha's Club, which is, much more narrative. Is there a different process? Does it go faster or slower because you are maybe working with more management? What's the difference in process there?
Yeah, I mean the process for let's say those two jobs is totally different. It goes faster with the big pop video actually than it does with the small indie project, at least in my experience. And that's because of money and logistics. I mean, there's more money, so you can pay everybody, better rates and get stuff done and immediately. Like you can get the location you want because you throw money at it and you have it, 2 days later if you need it. And there's also just delivery dates. Like with Nickelodeon, they have a premiere date. It has to go live on that date. That can speed up the editorial process, having that deadline. Sort of everybody needs to adhere to a very strict schedule. On the kind of indie projects where there aren't as many deadlines, it takes a lot more pre-pro because there's not big budgets. It takes maybe more kind of scouting and looking for the right location that's going to let you shoot there for nothing. So it's a longer process, but one that, maybe has a little bit more creative back and forth. They're different in their own way, obviously, in the final product as well. But the processes probably couldn't be more different.
And when you're working with sort of a demographic, when you're working on either a video or sort of an interactive project with Nickelodeon, you're working with people or you're working with a demographic that really haven't come up with watching music videos on TV or watching music videos on any other medium other than the internet. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about, moving into that interactive space of including a music video as part of an interactive marketing campaign that has, different tiers to it. And what the effectiveness of including sort of a music video in that mixture is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I've always said is, okay, music videos now, their primary distribution is not on television. And if it's not on television, it's not on broadcast, it's no longer a one-way street. People aren't sitting back passively watching television and different videos coming across. They're seeking them out. They're viewing them on devices that are built for interactivity. So why are they still just a passive viewing experience? Why is there not an ability for the user to engage, to interact, to pull in personal information, to use it in the video? And I think that's starting to dawn on record labels and on tech companies that there is an opportunity here and there is kind of a win-win for the user and for the artist. So that's definitely something that is evolving, and more people have expressed interest in it. I think the difficult part of it is that it usually requires more lead time and R&D than the music industry has built into sort of their cycle. Usually by the time they know what the radio single is, it's too late to do the R&D to really push the limits on the interactive side. So it kind of has to be a coordinated venture where either you're developing a technology and then applying it to an artist, or you're coming up with a concept far in advance and can start working on it. So by the time everything is shot and delivered, it can be applied to the project. So that's kind of like a little bit of the hurdles that people are facing now with it. But you know, I have hope for it in the future. I think it's definitely like a growing area and something that really interests me and gets my brain going. And artists as well seem to really be into some of these interactive concepts that I've been pitching.
And as a director, where do you kind of fit into the whole, you know, kind of execution of, you know, almost specifically the, you know, what happens within the HTML5? I mean, are you kind of pitching ideas that you think could work within the HTML5 and then, you know, there are developers who then try to make it work? Or are they giving you, you know, tools that you have to work in to the narrative of your music video? How does that work for you as a director?
I think it's different from project to project, but I would say that I work very closely with the tech side of the company. You know, they will tell me when something is not possible. I mean, I pitch things where, you know, they just don't feel like it's possible with where, you know, the technology is now. And then other times I will find out from them, like, hey, what is kind of the cutting edge right now? What is something you've never seen done that you know is possible, and have that conversation, and then find a way to pitch that and work with, you know, a music video that would be right for that technology. So it's a little bit of a back and forth. You know, that conversation has to always be open because you don't want to get stuck behind the eight ball and not be able to execute a concept because the technology hasn't gotten to that point yet.
And as a director, you're used to sort of working with technical people, you know, directors of photography, editors, you know, that kind of class. And as you mentioned, it's different once you get into with developers. Is there something you can see changing on the technical end in terms of development teams or development process that would allow, you know, music videos to adapt more easily to kind of the common timelines that music videos need to have for these interactive projects?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I'm seeing, the thing that I can see affecting the timeline the most is the money coming from the tech companies rather than from the record labels. Because if a tech company wants to set aside money to show off maybe some new code that they've written, you know, and they're coming to the record labels saying, we have X amount of dollars, what artist is right for this? The record label is then maybe a little bit more able to find the right artist in advance for that money, rather than getting your music video brief and it's saying, okay, we need to shoot this video in 3 weeks, we need treatments in 3 days, and then, you know, you having to write in technology knowing that they're not going to be able to implement that, you know, by the shoot in 3 weeks. So, you know, I think that where the money comes from will dictate the timeline in a little bit in most cases. And that was the case with Jasmine View. It was Microsoft, specifically Internet Explorer, that was putting up the money for that. So they had plenty of lead time to do the R&D and to kind of develop the tech around the experience.
And last question, are you now under any obligation to use Internet Explorer?
Legally, no. No obligation. Still, that team is great, and I was actually just meeting with them at Comic-Con, and I have a very good relationship with their ad agency. So you know, yeah, hopefully there'll be more collaborations in the future, and we're doing one right now with a comic book and graphic novel for a tablet experience. So yeah, definitely will be more projects coming out with them in the future.
Lex directed the video for Marry Me by Train. I just wanted to point that out. That's a good song. Maybe my... No, it's tough. You know, you ever notice the song comes out in twos? Like, Marry Me by Train came out around the same time as I Think I Want to Marry You by Bruno Mars. I think people can get those songs mixed up.
I'm not familiar with either of those songs.
And then, you know, a few years ago, we had this kind of rash of music video or songs where the subject was some sort of medical emergency on a dance floor. So you remember, can't remember who was by, but, you know, the one, evacuate the dance floor. Whoa, whoa, I'm infected by the sound. That one.
Syphilis on the dance floor. I know that one.
And then there was another one that was, I think, by Sean Kingston that was talking about...
Is Sean Kingston and 2 Chainz the same person?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought so.
2 Chainz just came out with a song that has one of the best titles I've ever heard. I love Dem Strippers by 2 Chainz.
Director Benny Boom. Who doesn't love Dem Strippers? It's important that love is spelled L-U-V in that song. Because you wouldn't know really how he felt without it, without that distinction of being spelled like that. Is that your pick of the week?
That is not my pick of the week.
It's a bummer. What is?
I'll tell you right now. Are we switching over to picks of the week?
Yeah, it's time to go over there to them.
I want to be where they are, and we're going to go there right now. And I guess I'm going first. Mm-hmm. And where's my pick of the week? It was right here.
And it moved. Back here with the dance floor. Oh, oh.
So my pick of the week this week is something that I'm kind of ashamed that I don't have the director info for. I will find it out and post it on there, but I just have searched everywhere. I can't find it. But it is for the song Natural Thing by the band Nobody Beats the Drum. And you may have seen this pop up in a few different places. It went viral, guys. It went viral, I guess, in some circles. And it is a simple premise, and that is dogs and cats. Cats especially like to follow lasers. Have you seen this video, Doug?
I'm still on mute because I was laughing at the way you said it went viral.
Hey, guys, it went viral.
It was a viral video.
I just imagine this kid, this like 23-year-old guy sitting at a computer turning around and saying, hey, guys, it went viral.
Yeah, he's just like keeping track. It's like, oh, finally the cat with the shoelaces went viral, guys.
Now we're going to get all that money. So this one is, it's a techno song. So I've often been really kind of fascinated by the challenge of doing a video for a techno video. And I think, you know, artists like Skrillex and you know, guys who are really big have been able to go to directors that have, you know, made a really interesting narrative composition. So I think that's one way you can go. It's expensive, though. And, you know, sometimes when it's, you know, like an electronic band or, you know, electronica song, you know, maybe the budget isn't that huge. I think this is a great example of using, you know, doing something really simple that is using the internet's natural inclination to look for these types of clips of animals doing something interesting and share it around. So it's a really smart video for that way, and it's also a really well put together video because the idea is, you know, it's this white box, you're seeing it from the top, and then there's this laser that it gets moved around, and you see different kind of compositions together layered on top of each other of different animals kind of reacting and trying to follow this laser. They have different animals. They have a dog, a cat, a ferret, and you know, as you can imagine, the thing moves to side to side. The cat follows it. But so it's a really, you know, funny concept. It's funny to see the animals kind of checking this out. But the thing that pushes it over the edge to me is there's like a lot of techno songs. There's this great buildup where, you know, it keeps getting higher and intensity gets, you know, higher and higher, and during those things they're doing really great cross cuts between like the cat staring at this pulsating laser and the laser itself kind of zooming in on each one. So it's a really really entertaining video because I think, you know, sometimes you can go for this concept that may be geared toward people sharing it or it being kind of with the times of, you know, what's popular. And that video, this video definitely does this, that, but it, to great, you know, success of effect, I think. But it also is a really kind of well edited, really well directed video. So that's my pick of the week. I do not have a director for that. I apologize. It's Natural Thing by Nobody Beats the Drum.
Great pick.
Thanks, Doug.
No problem. It's a viral video pick. My pick of the week is by a man named Mayor Hawthorne. The song is called A Long Time. It's directed by Henry DeMayo. This video currently appears on our list of music videos that incorporate a classic television show, because the concept of this video is essentially a... actually, it's not on the list because I'm not sure if this is a real show or not, or if they just faked it. But it's set up like a local UHF channel from Highland Park, Detroit, in like what appears to be maybe the late 80s or early 90s. And it's just like a local knockoff of Soul Train, essentially. And it really looks like it's just found footage recut to this kind of soulful Mayor Hawthorne song, but it really works. And I think what makes it work is the dancing. And that's what, I'm pretty sure this is actually found footage and they didn't recreate this. Maybe I should look into it a little bit more. But what this video has a lot of, which I love, and I'm always looking for in music videos, is aggressive dancing. There was aggressive dancing in my pick of the week last week with Psy's Gangnam Style, which, if you want to talk about a viral video, that one like blew the roof off. That's at lots of views.
That went really viral.
That is super viral. Also has a super amount of aggressive dancing, which... that's a list I know this Mayor Hawthorne video should appear on. Music videos with aggressive dancing. So let me make sure to put it on that one. But it's great. You have to check out this video. A lot of fun. I didn't look up whether or not it's found footage or they recreated it, because I don't want it ruined. I want it to be found. And so if I'm mistaken, I'll be really, really sad. So either way, great music video for all to enjoy, including you. Check it out. A Long Time by Mayor Hawthorne.
I want to, as we close out this podcast, bring to your attention just one last thing in the news. Have you been around the internet today and read about this whole anal tattoo thing?
I am, because originated in South Florida anyway.
Exactly, yes. From the New Times in Broward, Palm Beach. BrowardPalmBeach.com. This is where this video... we'll put a link in the show notes. Girl gets butthole tattoo. I don't know. What's your stance on that, Doug?
Well, she certainly seemed to enjoy it.
She's super into it, yeah.
So, whatever. It's what you like. I'm sure that's not the only questionable behavior that went on there. So, I mean, they showed up to find weird shit. They didn't know it was going to be anal tattoos, but they knew that they were going to find some weird shit. And they just happened to hit the jackpot instead of just, like, you know, winning a couple hundred bucks.
So, I just wanted to mention there's a music video connection there. Because this woman actually appears in a music video for Deuce Let's Get Crackin'. Band is Deuce, song is Let's Get Crackin'. So when you hear her say, when you watch this video, show notes again, she chants something like Deuce, Deuce, Deuce. And there's been speculation that she is on some sort of mind-altering drug. So people have been asking, you know, what is that? And she's this actually referenced to a music video that she was in. It's not a bad music video, so check it out as well.
Represent for that video. Always a connection to music video land. If there's a viral video, it's got ties to music video land.
Well, that about does it for our number 51 episode. We got some awesome ones coming up. So stay tuned over the next few weeks. Subscribe to the podcast, filmedinsert.com/podcast. You can get us on there. You can also get us on Stitcher, Smart Radio. Check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/filmedinsert, facebook.com/filmedinsert. Like us on there. We just hit 300.
Hey,
we're rising up there.
Getting close to those Mayor Hawthorne numbers.
Exactly. So check us out there, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, guys. Evacuate the dance floor. Oh.